course, 2024 is going to be a big election year, and that includes a lot of key races on the state and local levels, as well as the big presidential race. The filing period for candidates running for office in North Carolina wrapped up on Friday. You can get a breakdown of who's running for what on our website, chapelboro.com. This includes a lot of very high-profile races on the state level, with Roy Cooper term limited as governor. He's stepping down, so there is a very tightly contested Republican and Democratic primary with a lot of folks running to replace him. That includes current Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson and current State Treasurer Dale Falwell on the Republican side and current Attorney General Josh Stein on the Democratic side, which means as they all run for governor, they're stepping down from their respective seats, leaving open primaries there as well. And that's just the beginning. So a lot of high-profile races as we head into that March 5th primary. Where do things stand now that the primary season is getting underway and the filing period is wrapped up and we know who's going to be on the ballot? For that, we're joined by Tom Jensen, who is the Director of Public Policy Polling based out of Raleigh. PublicPolicyPolling.com is their website. They just conducted a survey of Democratic primary voters in North Carolina to get a sense of where things stand on that side of the aisle heading into primary season. Tom, thank you so much for being with us today. Good morning.
Hey, Aaron. Good to be with you.
So let's start with the governor's race. Obviously, a big race on both sides with a lot of folks vying to replace Roy Cooper. On the Democratic side, where do things stand?
Well, Attorney General Josh Stein really is the overwhelming favorite to get the Democratic nomination. We found that right now 56% of voters are planning to vote for him, and nobody else has more than 5%. Former Supreme Court Justice Mike Morgan, certainly on paper, is a serious candidate and has made a lot of good contributions to the state over the years, but he's just not very well known. 82% of voters say they don't know enough about him to have an opinion. So he's in second place, but with only 5%, 51 points behind Josh Stein. And then the other candidates, Marcus Williams is getting 4%, Sherelle Booker's getting 3%, and Gary Fox is getting 1%. So it doesn't look like there's going to be a whole lot of suspense about who the Democrats end up putting forward.
On Mike Morgan, did that difference between Stein and Morgan, did the degree of that surprise you at all? And if Morgan ends up doing what it takes to increase his name recognition, is there time for him to get this race closer?
I was surprised that it was as lopsided as it is. And one thing that was particularly interesting is where the race broke down among Black voters. There's been some speculation that Josh Stein might be a little bit weaker with Black voters and that might give Mike Morgan a sort of path to victory in the primary. But even there, Josh Stein got 49%, Mike Morgan only at 6%. So pretty strong numbers for Stein with Black voters, too. If Mike Morgan can raise a lot of money, he certainly could end up, I think, making this a more competitive race. But I think that's a big if, because definitely I think most of the Democratic power and fundraising establishment is pretty well unified behind Josh Stein. So it may be hard for Mike Morgan to break down a lot of those doors in terms of getting donors to support him.
Josh Stein leaving the attorney general seat to run for governor, which leaves that seat open. And there's also a pretty highly contested primary for that seat on the Democratic side with Jeff Jackson, who's got a pretty high profile statewide and now nationally for his role in Congress. He's getting gerrymandered out of his seat, so he's running for attorney general instead. Satana DeBerry, who's Durham's attorney general, Durham's district attorney, rather, is running for AG. And those are just a couple of the candidates on the ballot. Where do things stand in that race?
Yeah, Jeff Jackson starts out with a 26-point lead in the primary for attorney general. He's at 34%. Satana DeBerry's at 8%, and the third candidate, Tim Dunn's at 2%. So in that race, you do still have 56% of voters undecided. So there's a lot of people on the fence, but definitely a good starting point for Jeff Jackson.
How about some of the other races that are a little bit further down on the ballot, insurance commissioner and things like that, where we've also potentially got some open seats?
Yeah, there's a couple other of these statewide races where we do have clear leaders. State Senator Rachel Hunt for lieutenant governor has a 17-point lead. She's at 23%. Mark Robinson is at 6%, not the current lieutenant governor Mark Robinson, but randomly on Friday, Democrat named Mark Robinson filed for lieutenant governor, and I guess that's worth some name recognition because that Mark Robinson's getting 6%, and Ben Clark, who's a been a state senator is only getting 5%. So that was sort of an oddity in the lieutenant governor numbers. Another state senator, Natasha Marcus, has an 18-point lead for insurance commissioner. She's at 23% to 5% for her opponent, David Wheeler. But then the rest of the races, you really can't say much other than everyone's undecided. 79% undecided for the Supreme Court, 77% undecided for state treasurer, 77% undecided for superintendent of public instruction. The ever so nominal leaders in those races, incumbent Allison Riggs is slightly ahead for Supreme Court. State representative from the Charlotte area, Wesley Harris, is slightly up for state treasurer. And Mo Green, who used to be the superintendent of the Guilford County Schools and has been the head of the Z. Smith Reynolds Foundation, is slightly ahead for superintendent of public instruction. But definitely once you get below governor, there's a lot of votes out there to be won in these various races.
That overwhelming percentage of people who are undecided, I assume that's just a lack of name recognition. How much do you see that changing between now and primary day? Is there going to be a significant percentage of voters who actually do learn about the candidates, or will it still be up in the air even then?
That is a very good question. And my bet is that with some of these lower profile races like Supreme Court and superintendent of public instruction, we could probably do a poll the day before the election and still have 50% of voters say that they're undecided. But 50% won't leave it blank. They figure out how to vote in these races somehow. And it's sometimes a mystery to me in these council of state races what ends up making people's minds up. Certainly one thing that's going to be very important, I think, is endorsements in some of these races. That'll help people figure some things out when they don't know who any of the candidates are. But I hate to say it, I think some of it gets determined just by deciding who you think has a cooler sounding name when you show up at the polls. I definitely think for some of these really sort of unsexy races that can end up being a determining factor in who ends up getting the nominations or not. So it's kind of silly, but it's just a fact of humanity.
On that note, I was wondering if being named Mark Robinson and running for lieutenant governor on the Democratic side gives you an advantage because of name recognition or a disadvantage because of name recognition.
I think it definitely broadly gives you a disadvantage based on name recognition. But the fact that this Mark Robinson, who I have no idea who it is, is out polling a former state senator right now, I think it's worth just enough name recognition that something like that is possible. I don't think it's worth enough name recognition to actually like win the race, but I do think, it makes no sense that some guy named Mark Robinson would be out polling a state senator right now. And I do think that's just because there might still be a few, in Eastern North Carolina registered Democrats who are more conservative sort of voters, and they might find that Mark Robinson name appealing if they've never heard of anybody else.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, public policy polling. So we're talking about the primary races on the state level. Locally, we've got some primary races as well. The Orange County School Board race is actually the general election on primary day. 7 candidates for 3 open seats there. Beyond that, not too many contested races locally, with the one exception of District 2 of Orange County Board of Commissioners, with Phyllis Porteascot facing a couple of primary challengers. What do you make of that?
Well, it is really curious. The thing I find particularly interesting is in the Southern District for Orange County, Marilyn Carter is going to become a county commissioner without ever actually having to beat anybody in an election. So I'm surprised that there's not more competition on that front. And then it's interesting in some of the other races, like our state legislative races and our congressional race, we obviously elected a bunch of brand new people to those positions in 2022. We sent Valerie Fuchsia to Congress. We sent Greg Meyer to the state Senate. We sent Ellen Boynsey and Renee Price to represent us in Raleigh. And I do think the fact that none of them have opponents again this time, after they were all in relatively contested races, and in some cases heavily contested races last time, I think speaks to the fact that they've all established themselves well during their respective first terms in these offices in Washington, D.C. and Raleigh. I think if any of them were sort of disappointing their constituents, you probably would see them with an opponent their second time around. So I guess I really sort of see in the general lack of competitiveness in Orange County a sort of general contentment with the direction that these individuals are going in, and also a contentment with the direction that the Board of County Commissioners is going in, because otherwise there would be some new faces going in to try to shake things up.
So I'm gonna ask this question, and I'm gonna stammer over it because this is just popping into my mind as you're saying this. We often hear from political advocates and folks who are interested in government, who really care about democracy and getting folks out to the polls, that it's good to have like these local races on the ballot in the big midterm election years and presidential election years, because that guarantees that way more people are going to get out to the polls and actually cast votes in these races, as opposed to like doing the Chapel Hill Town Council race in an odd year when your turnout's going to be like 20-25% if you're lucky. On the other hand, when it's the Chapel Hill Town Council race and it's an odd year, you get 25% of the vote, but you also get so much of the attention focused specifically on that race, whereas in 2024, you've got all of these low ballot races that you're going to have 50-60% turnout, but no one's going to know anything about the candidates, and all of the media attention is going to be sucked up by the presidential race and the gubernatorial race. What do you think is better for democracy?
That is a great question. So the question of what's better for democracy, I'll get back to that. What's better for governance, I actually very much think, is it's better to have those local elections when they're the only thing on the ballot.
Okay.
In our shared home state of Michigan, they actually basically forced all elections for everything to be on even-year general election ballots. And in Ann Arbor, where I'm from, we have terrible school board members who never would have gotten elected in a school board race back when we had school board races where that was the only thing on the ballot and only people who were informed about the school board won. And now that everybody's voting on the school board, whether they have any clue what they're doing whatsoever, we're getting a lot more people who just aren't vetted, who are ending up causing problems, firing superintendents and that kind of thing. And I really do think it's a product of people voting in those school board races who have no clue what they're doing. Whereas in Chapel Hill's school board and town council races, at least it's the only focus on the ballot and it just doesn't get buried behind everything else. So, you know, I know people would argue it's better to have more people voting in those races. I actually really think it's better just to have more informed people voting in those races, and that it's better to have them even in a lower turnout election if it ensures that people actually really know what they're voting on.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling. Got to wrap up. Any other numbers that stand out to you from this poll that we haven't mentioned yet?
I think it's not going to be the sexiest primary night. You and I joked about the fact that there's a UNC basketball game on primary night and whether that would prevent us from having our normal election night coverage. I think people are going to be pretty safe in Orange County watching the basketball game on March 5th because we're not going to have a lot of intrigue in either our local races, and at least on the Democratic side where most of our voters vote in Orange County, doesn't look like it's going to be a ton of intrigue in our statewide races either.
Phyllis Porteascot sitting at home crossing her fingers hoping you're right.
Yep.
Publicpolicypolling.com for more information on PPP. Tom Jensen, thank you so much.
Take care.